What if everything we believe about talent is wrong? When a rotund Irish geography teacher who knew absolutely nothing about running became the world's most successful athletics coach, training virtually every prize-winning Kenyan middle distance runner for decades, something didn't add up. In 2011, Kenyans claimed 19 of the 20 fastest marathon times worldwide. Scientists scrambled to explain it, studying their slim calves, analyzing altitude adaptations, searching desperately for genetic advantages. But here's the uncomfortable truth. At the 1999 Marathon World Cup, Europeans dominated the top five spots, with the first East African finishing ninth. Just 10 years later, Kenya and Ethiopia completely owned the podium. Did running genes somehow migrate across continents in a decade? The real answer reveals something far more powerful and accessible than genetics. What separates Jamaica's sprint dominance from Britain's perpetual disappointment isn't DNA, but something psychologist James Flynn calls capitalization, the percentage of human potential in a community that's successfully unlocked. Jamaica doesn't have more sprint talent per capita. They simply have superior systems for finding and developing it. Their formal athletic structure starts children competing at ages 2 to 3, with kindergartens employing coaches and 6-year-olds running in the national stadium before crowds. The revelation is both humbling and electrifying. Creating exceptional performance isn't about discovering genetic unicorns, but uncovering existing potential that surrounds us everywhere. In 2005, Jamaican sprinter Asafa Powell broke the 100-meter world record despite running a mediocre 10.8 seconds just 3 years earlier. His coach, Stephen Francis, searches for talent that whispers, athletes with tremendous hidden potential. Talent resembles an iceberg. Only 10% shows above water, while 90% remains hidden beneath, containing the mindset, motivations, and values that determine development. This explains why Barcelona stars Andres Iniesta and Xavi won nothing as youth players, and why Michael Jordan didn't make his high school team. Francis examines training history for context. A 19-year-old running 10.6 seconds with minimal training might have vastly more potential than someone running 10.2 seconds with professional coaching. A revealing pattern: 32.4% of FIFA World Cup players were born January through March, while only 21% were born October through December. The relative age effect makes children born early in the selection year appear more mature during crucial assessments. Great talent discoveries happen when we suspend our idea of perfection and distinguish between fatal flaws and solvable issues. In Rio's Rocinha favela, 9-year-old Felipe plays football on cracked asphalt, a German agent already paying his family's bills. Over 90% of Brazil's top footballers emerged from poverty, training approximately 22 hours weekly and reaching 10,000 hours by age 13. What appears as natural Brazilian magic is actually intensive early training disguised as play. Anders Ericsson's research shattered romantic notions of innate talent. Elite violinists accumulated 7,410 practice hours by age 18, compared to 3,420 for average players. His conclusion: high performance is primarily a choice, not a gift. This 10-years rule appears across domains. Elite performance requires approximately 10,000 hours of deliberate practice, equivalent to 2 hours and 44 minutes daily for 10 years. Early training exploits critical developmental windows. In Bokoji, Ethiopia, children run 10 kilometers to school daily. Haile Gebrselassie developed his distinctive bent arm style, carrying school books during his commute. Michael Jordan's failed baseball career illustrates this. Despite basketball greatness, he lacked the specialized coordination developed during childhood. The fundamental truth remains unforgiving: there are no shortcuts to mastery. On July 3, 1991, an unknown runner without a number effortlessly pulled ahead in Stockholm's Olympic Stadium 3,000-meter steeplechase. This was Moses Kiptanui from Kenya, who nearly broke the world record. 20 years later, he revealed, "I had a strong conviction that I could win that race. Not winning was not an option." This invincible self-belief permeates Kenyan running culture. An American coach observed, "Virtually every running rookie in Kenya wants to set a world record and believes this is viable. Meanwhile, most New York runners merely aim to complete a race." Belief creates measurable biological effects. Placebos influence brain chemicals, stress hormones, and immune systems. Parkinson's patients given placebo injections showed higher dopamine levels. Kenyans have created their own collective performance placebo. Self-belief comes more from stories than facts. In I-10, Kenya, elite runners train alongside novices, creating a powerful environment of possibility. Wilson Kipketer credits seeing Olympic gold medalist Peter Rano at his high school. "He slept in the same building, we ate the same food. That made me think, if he could do it, I can do it too." When Anna Kournikova reached Wimbledon semifinals in 1997, no Russians ranked in the world's top 10. 2 years later, five did. The equipment and genetics hadn't changed, only their self-belief exploded. Stephen Francis runs the world's most successful athletics club with surprisingly humble facilities. No high-tech equipment or proper track, just a grass field, cones, stopwatches, and rusty weights. Yet this club produces world record holders and Olympic champions. A performance environment should not be designed for comfort, but for hard work, Francis insists. While clubs like Chelsea FC spend $100 million on luxurious academies with minimal results, MDP thrives in Spartan conditions. This philosophy contrasts with Freddie Adu's story, once celebrated as the new Pele at age 12. By 14, he had a $500,000 annual contract and millions in endorsements, yet his career collapsed. Stanford psychologist Carol Dweck's research explains why. Students praised for intelligence rather than effort became reluctant to take challenges. Being good too early removes motivation and breeds entitlement. A Swedish study of elite tennis players revealed none were the absolute best youth players. Instead, they developed growth mindsets by constantly striving to catch those ahead. Breaking complacency requires what researchers call urgency, rage to master, or divine dissatisfaction, a driving force permeating all performance gold mines. Behind every gold mine of athletic talent stands a godfather, a coach who commands respect and loyalty, yet none successfully practice the sports they coached. Colm O'Connell, Kenya's running guru, never ran competitively. Juan Park, coaching South Korean golf champions, was an English teacher. Sentinyehu Eshetu, who trained multiple Olympic gold medalists from tiny Bokoji, Ethiopia, preferred basketball. This distance proves valuable. Former athletes often force their methods on others, unable to see past their ego. When pressed for coaching philosophies, the Godfathers resist providing a golden method. Their strength lies in flexibility, shifting between sympathetic listener and dictatorial taskmaster. Though enormously ambitious, they remain unselfish. Good coaching isn't about charisma, but setting clear goals and relentless pursuit. Juan Park runs a ruthlessly disciplined program where players train from dawn until bedtime year-round. Eshetu built a track with his bare hands, then expanded to train 300 children arriving daily at 6 a.m. Stephen Francis revolutionized sprint training by creating a team environment in an individual sport, telling athletes that Olympic champions don't take Christmas off. Muhammad Ali said, "Champions aren't made in gems, but from something deep inside, desire, dream, vision." When asked what separates Olympic sprinters by hundreds of a second, Glenn Mills, Usain Bolt's coach, answered simply, "Who wants it most?" Shelly-Ann Fraser embodies this. An unremarkable high school athlete from Jamaica's violent Waterhouse District, she slept four to a bed and sometimes ran barefoot. After coach Stephen Francis spotted her potential, she transformed into an Olympic and world champion. When she won gold in 2008, routine murders in Waterhouse temporarily ceased. She became a symbol of hope. Researcher Angela Duckworth identified this quality as grit, passion for a single mission with unwavering dedication. Her research showed grit outperformed traditional indicators like test scores and athletic experience. With 10,000 hours typically required for mastery, this powerful commitment is essential. Motivation is kindled less by personal interests than by social role models. Jamaica's high school championships draws 30,000 spectators and 1.2 million TV viewers in a country of 2.8 million, creating the perfect environment for developing grit through inspiring models, ruthless competition, and massive pressure. The uncomfortable truth: talent exists everywhere, but excellence emerges only where hunger, belief, and relentless work converge. Your potential isn't determined by genetics or zip code. It's determined by how badly you want it.